I still enjoy optometry. If it was something that I didn't enjoy, like, I'd be gone by now. But for me, it's like a dual passion type of thing. You know, I went to uni because I wanted to do something where I could help people. In many ways, I can still do that through a full-time job as long as I'm keeping the balance.
Just to let you know, your parents aren't watching. Are you sure you just went to uni because you want to help people?
really, you know.
Before we get started on today's episode, we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded, the land of the Darug people. We would like to acknowledge and pay respects to our elders past and present and the next generation coming through. Now, on to today's episode. Welcome to the Level Asian Podcast. We're joined by Kevin La, aka Sydney Food Boy. Kev created Sydney Food Boy as a passion project to tell stories of the incredible and diverse foods from all over the world that you can find right here in Sydney. Kev has over 25,000 subscribers on YouTube, 100,000 followers on Instagram, and over 135,000 followers on TikTok. When Kev isn't filming great food content for us to watch, he's busy being a full-time optometrist. In this episode, we chat to Kev about the inspiration that kickstarted Sydney Food Boy, how he grew his platform so quickly, and we also dive into Kev's favorite food spots and future plans for his brand. Enjoy the episode.
One of the questions I want to start with is, I actually started following you really early on.
I appreciate it.
No, and the reason why, like, one of the things that really stuck out for me is, and even now talking to you, I'm like, and my girlfriend said the same, she's like, seems like a really wholesome guy. Like, you know,
honest
guy. And it's different because I think about looking at like influencers or creators and that sort of stuff, they're usually really loud and proud, very extroverted. Yeah. And I think you strike me as someone who's much more sort of quiet type, but you sort of push yourself out there. Mm. So I got to watch you grow over the last 12 months. The question I have to start off with is, how did the whole idea of starting to do, you know, food content in Sydney come about?
It's a long story. I would say it probably started when I was overseas at some stage. This was pre-COVID. I've always loved traveling, you know what I mean? I think everyone does, right?
Yeah.
So to some extent, I was on a trip to Singapore. I was actually solo in Singapore for like 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in Singapore, what do you do? Like, you eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was loving it, man. This is my first time solo because every other trip I was with people, with my friends and stuff like that. And this is the first trip I was just by myself. I was, you know, going around every single day, finding something to do, finding something to eat. I was reading up a lot about, you know, what's good food in the area. A lot of websites online were saying, oh, Singapore's the greatest food city in the world. I'm like, yeah, pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right.
And I think a lot of things came from that one trip for me, right? The first thing that came was when I saw all of this stuff online, all the websites, all the publications. Like, it was great to see that, but then for me, like growing up in Sydney and in particular Southwest Sydney, you know that the food here is amazing, right? Like just the diversity, the multiculturalism, like what we have access to here is second to none in the world, I reckon. Like I truly, truly believe that.
I believe that as well. Like I go overseas and I eat the food. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's really good as well. But like the diversity in Australia is just insane.
Choices.
And the choices and the the vegetables and just the meat just sound, that tastes better.
Yeah,
the produce just tastes so 100%. Much better.
Yeah. Like people will come from overseas to come eat pho here. You know what I mean? Like I hear like Americans come, people from my relatives from Singapore come as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're all like, oh, you know, I really want to try the beef pho.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's so good about the beef pho?
You know what it is? Do you know what it is? They don't get diarrhea after.
Yeah.
I mean, Singapore is pretty good, man. Yeah, like sanitary wise, man. But I agree. I do think that I come back from traveling just like you and really feel like, you know, we get it really lucky down here as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So 100%. You were saying you were seeing all this, you know, stuff, and obviously Sydney doesn't really get that sort of content.
Yeah. Like I've always felt that Sydney never got that love. You know what I mean? Like only the people that grew up around here, grew up in our city, know how amazing it is. But when you see coverage of, you know, where the best food cities in the world are, Sydney never gets, you know, that shout out. So that was that for me. That was number one. Number two was when I was overseas and I was solo and I was traveling around, I loved the feeling, man. Like for me, it was so fun. And I wanted to do something like that every single day. And I sort of, you know, when I think back about it, it was like, you know, the thing that I loved most about traveling was, you know, these experiences, trying the new food, you know, learning the stories behind the food. And I wanted to do that every single day I was in Sydney too. It didn't have to be something where I needed to quit my job. yet.
So you do that, you did that on the weekends after hours?
Yeah, like every day, man. Like at nighttime, after work, in the weekends, every day off I got. And I just wanted to try new food. I wanted to meet new people. I wanted to use food as a medium to, you know, learn different stories and
So when you say you were doing this over the weekend, what were you doing? Just eating and just
eating at restaurants and stuff. Like at first it was just, you know, your regular food blog, I suppose. But when I think back to that period of time in the food blog space, food blog scene, you saw the food blog websites that people had about Sydney. There were a few. And then you saw, I guess, food pages on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
They were different things, right? The food bloggers would write about their food, you know, they
review it. And,
you know, they would talk about their experience. They would write about, you know, where the food came from. Whereas the Instagrammers at the time, TikTok wasn't even a thing. So it was just Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Instagrammers at the time were just like, oh, I've come to visit this cafe. It's very nice, right? Look at this pretty, pretty food, like pretty thing on the.
I'll just take photos. Pretty and dish. Nice looking things.
Looks great.
Yeah.
You know? But there wasn't a sort of in between.
So you wanted to bring education, so some sort of level of teaching, while creating great food content as well at the same time. So was that sort of in between?
100%. So I wanted to learn. I wanted to, you know, share what I learned about food. I wanted to use food as a way to connect with others as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways it's grown, and then it's allowed me to not just learn from others and understand other people's culture, but help others too. So that's where it's at now.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking about it off camera just then. And, you know, Kevin just did a video on like literally up the road here, Northmead, Dominican fried chicken. I was like, I didn't even know this place existed. We were literally talking about it in the office that we're going to head over. So I think in terms of helping people, this is exactly what you're talking about. It's like if you can give people these businesses the exposure, it actually helps them a lot as well. But it also helps on the other side with people trying to discover new foods and then, you know, finding it through, you know, the content that you create as well. If we can just sort of go all the way back in terms of like childhood, because we'd like to start there as well. I just grew up in Southwest Sydney. Which part of Sydney, and what was family life like? What was childhood like?
Grew up in Cabramatta. Still live in Canley, Cabramatta, same thing, right? My dad was an immigrant, as all our parents are. He came, I think it was 1990. And then he worked a factory job. He worked really, really hard. We lived in a small townhouse in Cabramatta. Still remember the address, still walk past it. So my uncle was the one who came by boat. And then he sponsored my dad over. Because my dad,
Flew over. From Vietnam.
My dad flew over from Vietnam, So my dad was born in Cambodia. And then fled to Vietnam. Spent a couple of years in his adolescent years in Vietnam and then came over. And then from there, that's where mum came over as well after that.
So your parents had met in Vietnam?
Cambodia.
In Cambodia, was it?
Yeah.
Right, gotcha. And then you were born here in Australia? Is that?
I was born in Australia.
You were born in Australia. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So if you don't mind me asking, how old were you when you... what year were you born in?
1996.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a different generation because for me, I don't... like I'm born in 1990 and most of the people I hang out with were... their parents came from boat, by a boat, sorry.
That's right.
And so your parents flew here and then they gave birth to you. Did they speak real good English or?
Hell no.
Okay.
Still to this day, like not really that great.
Yeah. They can get around at least like?
Not much. Like,
wow.
You know, signing contracts, like I'm sure you as an accountant, you know, like, you know, different things that they try to do, professional services they have to do. As adults, there's still me helping that out a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what was their reason for coming here?
Better life.
Yeah. Same. So it's the same thing with our parents as well.
Yeah. My dad talks a lot about Pol Pot in his early childhood.
Khmer Rouge.
Yeah, Khmer Rouge. And I believe that's why they went to Vietnam.
Right.
And sorry, like for the guys that don't know, what is that?
Pol Pot was like a regime. Like he was a guy. He came about in Cambodian politics at some stage. Don't ask me the year, I forgot.
Han knows a lot about this.
Yeah. He pretty much came about and he just made up his own rules, you know, broke a lot of people's lives. Killed a lot of people too.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think there was some like, I don't know what the stat is, but it was like something crazy about how they killed more Cambodians, like more, there was a genocide, more people died during the Khmer Rouge regime than like the Nazi regime. Yeah. Something crazy like that, wasn't it?
But it's just not talked about as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Cambodians know.
Yeah.
They all remember.
Yeah.
Yeah,
100%.
That's insane. Yeah. All right. So then growing up in terms of school life, even university. So can you walk us through that experience?
Started school in, how old was I? I think I was age 6, you know, going to primary school. Asian dominant primary school. And then after that, I went to Sefton, same as you guys.
Which is crazy because we didn't plan this.
Yeah, we didn't plan this.
Yep.
So I think like going into school, like primary school and high school, from an Asian perspective, it was rather comfortable because a lot of your people around you, they're Asian too, you know. So everyone was sort of from the same area-ish, you know, had the same family story. And then after that, I went to university. Mm-hmm. University, I studied optometry. Mm-hmm. Still quite Asian-centric. Like,
it was very Asian profession.
Yeah. Yep. Sefton High School is probably 90% Asian. Optometry is maybe 60% Asian. So, yeah. So I guess my whole schooling life feels rather comfortable. Like I was just in and amongst Asian people. People who look very similar to me, people of color. And if they weren't Asian in optometry, most of them were from, you know, other cultural backgrounds too. Mm-hmm. You get a few Caucasians, of course, but...
Yeah. But you were just surrounded by Asians pretty much most of the time as well. Even work now, like you work as an optometrist as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Work's a bit more multicultural, I suppose. That was probably my first time going into, you know, doing something where I wasn't around Asians as much. My colleagues were Asians because optometrists, right? But then the people that I was seeing, like my patients, in my first job, they were largely Caucasian. Mm. So... it was fun, like for me. I decided to work out in an area where it was like at the time considered semi-regional. So it was on the outskirts of Sydney.
Right.
Like borderline, like if you drive down another half an hour, it'd be regional, you know what I mean?
And why did you decide to work there?
A couple of different reasons. Like as an optometrist, when you come out, you do want the experience. You want to learn as much as you can in the first 2 years of your working career. And one way that you can do that is what people say is to go out regional. Right, because when you go out regional, there's not as much access to healthcare. There's not much access to specialist care, so, which means a lot of the things that you'll see, especially the interesting things, will come onto your chair.
Oh, yeah. So you get more exposure by going out to regional as well.
Yeah, but I didn't want to go like full regional, so then I just
like half an hour. Sydney. So which part of Sydney was that?
Narellan. At the time, it was like semi-regional. Now it's sort of like
it's not really. Still Sydney. Yeah, no, everyone's moving over there.
Yeah, that's right.
It's cheaper.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, tore up blogging, and then I've got a note here that says Nepal. So can you like explain to me how blogging in Nepal sort of all started out and what that was
about? What started your career, right?
Remember how I said it was a long story how I started? So I ended up in Singapore solo because I was on a volunteer trek in Nepal. So I was doing a volunteer eye care trek called Eyes for Everest at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was pretty much up on the mountain. We had to start off in Kathmandu, take a plane to a place called Lukla, which is the very bottom of Everest National Park, and then do a trek up to little villages up on the mountains and then do eye care there. And then somewhere along the lines, I was injured, so I had to come down.
How'd you injure yourself?
It was pretty much a hernia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so on the bottom of my abs, there's a hole.
Right.
Well, there was a hole. Yeah.
As in it was caused by you being up in Nepal?
It got worse.
So you already sort of had it somewhat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then I had to come down because it's not safe to trek after that.
Yeah.
Man, it was a very eye-opening trip because for me, when you go and you trek Nepal, obviously you want to be in and around other people.
Yeah.
Right? Like teamwork makes the dream work, right? So you're in a group of, for us, optometrists and, you know, other people who had joined the trek. And we were all trekking together to get to our destination in order to provide that eye care or the, you know, the volunteership. This is how it works. You come in a group and you have trek guides. So they tell you where to go. You know, they... you know, walk you up the mountain and down the mountain and all that. You get the porters, which help to carry your bags and stuff like that as well.
Mm.
So if you imagine that picture, it's like, I don't know, maybe 15 people walking along together. I was falling behind every single day, right, because of the injury. So then the first day I was maybe like half an hour behind.
Oh, wow. This is significantly behind.
Yeah. The next day I was like an hour behind because we're not talking short treks, man. We're talking like 6 to 8 hour treks every single day. One day it was like 12 hour trek too. That's a long trek. So obviously you can fall behind. So then I was on the trip, had to come down. That's how I ended up in Singapore for 10 days because I had to make a decision at that point whether or not to stay in Kathmandu and wait for the rest of the trek group to finish the work and then come down and meet up with them and then go home, or if I wanted to relocate. So Singapore was sort of on my flight path. So I was like, I'll meet you guys in Singapore. So that's how I got to Singapore. And that's where this journey began, I suppose. Yeah.
And then so it started out as a blog. Would you say TikTok was your first sort of major social media platform that you started creating content about, or you were doing something else before that?
I would say it's Instagram.
Instagram was where you started, right? And then, and then so can you walk us through that process or that journey from the time that you went from blogging to Instagram and then to TikTok as well?
Okay. So I started off on Instagram and it was just your regular old food blog, I guess. But as you guys know, the reason why I wanted to do this and the reason why I started was so much more than just, you know, your regular old Instagram food page.
Pretty pictures, yeah.
From there, I started doing what I call tonight's writing, which is pretty much every night I would write a new post on Instagram with pictures and, you know, just talking about food that I tried, food that I ate, and I try to make it something different every single night. Did that for months and months. And then at some stage, I was having so much fun doing that. I was like, oh, why don't I get this on video? So I knew YouTube was a platform that I might want to consider. And I was like, all right, you know what? Let's just buy a camera. Let's just do it. Because, you know, why not, right?
Mm.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Like, you a basketball fan? Yeah, keep going.
So then I started YouTube and it was fun. Like I was doing exactly the same thing that I was doing on Instagram, like with writing and learning about food and all that. But I was just doing it through a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I was recording my food adventures and, you know, something I really liked to do was whenever I go to places to eat, I would always have conversations, like candid conversations with, you know, the restaurant owner or people that work there about, you know, what the food means to them, why they cook that food. Particularly the smaller businesses, you'll get a lot of these conversations if you, you know, ask.
Super passionate about it as well.
Yeah, 100%, right? Like you want to delve deeper into that passion.
And the
like,
story. And
stuff, understand like why, because it makes the food taste better, man. Like
100%.
Yeah. And going back to why I wanted to start, for me, it always felt like when I had these conversations, that was my way of traveling in Sydney
without going anywhere. So you felt like you were being a tourist in your own city.
100%. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a really great feeling for me. And that's why I love doing it. And I was really passionate about doing it every single night or every single day. From there, so I had the YouTube channel going. That was quite hard to keep up, actually, because I was trying to push like one video a week. Everyone that goes on YouTube and that starts YouTube says, you got to do one video a week, otherwise it's not going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying my best, man. I was doing that for maybe a year or so.
And you were editing your own videos? You had no one working for you?
No, not at the time. So I was doing Instagram every night and then I was doing YouTube once a week.
Wow.
And yeah, and I was doing optometry full time. Yeah.
Do you, you know, because I think we've got a lot of similarities in that case, travel, food, content creation. Mm. One of the guys who I look to all the time, Anthony Bourdain, is like this massive inspiration for me. Like I was like, I tell Noel all the time, like I'm just starting a travel company that just documents like travel, food and culture. Did you watch much of like No Reservations, Parts Unknown? Like who were your, if it's not, who was sort of, did you have anyone you sort of look to get ideas from?
I feel like a lot of the inspiration from what I do comes from within. Like I didn't watch too many other people's outwards, content.
Yeah.
Because I was just going by what I liked. You know, it wasn't necessarily that I was looking at other creators or other people. Anthony Bourdain's amazing, by the way. Like, I love his stuff. Like, I read his stuff nowadays, but I didn't used to like 3 years ago. And it's only because I'm in the food space now where I'm starting to see, like, a lot of people see Anthony Bourdain as one of the greatest of all time to do it, you know, because he was introducing all of these foods from around the world to so many different people. He was creating these connections before anyone else was doing it, right? So I guess I enjoyed watching people on YouTube like Mark Wiens and Mikey Chen and all them. But I didn't watch them like religiously. Like I just enjoyed their content too.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Like, oh, you see that and then they're living their entire life doing that. And it's so cool, right? So you ask yourself, like, why can't you do that too?
Yeah. And you just went out and did it.
So from what I know, you still work, right?
Yeah.
So why? Like, why? Like, it seems like you would like to just do this full time, right?
I still enjoy optometry. You know, if it was something that I didn't enjoy, like, I'd be gone by now. But for me, it's like a dual passion type of thing. You know, I went to uni because I wanted to do something where I could help people. In many ways, I can still do that, you know, through a full-time job, as long as I'm keeping the balance between the full-time job and the food blog thing.
Just to let you know, your parents aren't watching. Are you sure you just went to uni because you want to help people?
No, really.
Speaking of parents,
yeah.
Do they know you are this big influencer now, or do they still think you're just like Kev the optometrist?
My dad reckons I'm an advertiser for restaurants.
That's like make money on it. Does your parents ever go, how much money you make?
I barely make much on YouTube because I just hired someone to help me out with the editing because it was getting too much. And what I make on YouTube doesn't even pay for that. Yeah. So I'm dipping into my own pocket.
Could you do this full time if you wanted to?
Some weeks maybe, but...
Not always.
Yeah. Well, that's why I keep the full-time job as well, because you still need that salary.
Do you get many brand deals? Do you get, now that you sort of got a fairly large offering, you sort of have brands reach out to you?
Here and there. Brands will reach out to work with me on, for example, TikTok or Instagram to do promotions of their
sponsored
products,
content,
or their food. Yeah. I have to be quite picky, you know what I mean? Because you can't just work with any old brand. You want to work with people or places or companies that you feel align with your values. It's harder in that regard, but, you know, like the brand promotions do come here and there, which is good.
Yeah. So when did you start getting people coming to you?
In terms of like size of the account?
Yeah.
TikTok maybe somewhere between 50,000 to 100,000. TikTok's a funny platform because when I first started out on TikTok wasn't seen as like a real place to be at the time. So I feel like I was fairly early. I wasn't the earliest, but I was fairly early. And then as more people started to see, you know, how many people could watch a TikTok video, that's when more companies started to look in that direction. Before that, it was purely Instagram. When I first started Instagram, it was very hard to grow. Like, you know, if you think about the numbers back then, man, it took me maybe 1 year to hit 10,000 people, right? It was extremely, extremely hard to grow because short form videos weren't a thing back then. It was just Instagram posts.
And then photos and stuff.
Yeah. Photos and, yeah. And for me, the writing as well. But the algorithm saw it as the same thing. Like whether or not you upload one post or... like a post full of just photos or a post with photos and writing, exact same thing. Like there was no difference for the Instagram algorithm. So like, why would they support someone who's new? So there were people on, you know, huge, huge accounts, like, you know, 80,000, 90,000, 100,000. And in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm doing this every single day on Instagram. I might not even get there. Because these guys were like the OGs of Instagram. So they were here when Instagram was bounding numbers, followers to their accounts. And it just wasn't that at the time. And then TikTok came about. And then TikTok, like, you were getting a lot more people to see your stuff. Obviously, it was in video form, so I had to switch it up. Like, I couldn't do posts and writing. I was just making random old videos, man. Like, back then, I had no setup or form for my videos. So for context, right now, what I do is I go to, a restaurant. If I really like it, I'll, you know, make... capture video clips and then put it all together into a short form video, put some background music on it and put a voiceover over it, like to tell a story or whatever. And that's what my short form video is like right now. And then I'll cross post it to both TikTok and Instagram. Right. So that's what it is now, but it took me a really long time being on TikTok and just making silly videos with background music that you can just add to on the platform or on the app. And I did that, I would say, even like 1,000 times before I found something that I enjoyed. I never really liked the sound of my own voice, you know what I mean? So it was a lot for me to put a voiceover and then to put subtitles and stuff.
You did YouTube, right? Or you stopped doing YouTube?
So YouTube, I started before TikTok. And then I had originally started TikTok because I had watched like Gary Vee or something. He was like, oh, hop on TikTok, man.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot more people seeing your stuff. I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it, man. So I was trying to use TikTok as my a driver to get more people watching my YouTube. But it flipped the script a little bit because more people were just watching the TikToks. And I was like, all right, let's just concentrate on the TikTok for now then. And then... yeah, you got it to a point where you hit over 100,000 on TikTok, just people watching the videos, and then the videos getting better and better each time. And for me, it did feel like, you know, it was something I could do every single day as well. It's like that 1% better every day thing, man. Like the more consistent you are, the better you get at it.
Yeah.
And the more you'll get out of it. You know what I mean? Consistency wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I was trying to do that every night, and I was trying to do the Instagram photos and writing every night, different pieces of content. But just me sitting there at home for like 2 to 3 hours a night, you know, after work, typing away and editing away, getting a video out every single night for like months, man. Still to this day, like I still do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that was like you said around 2019. So pandemic then hit.
Mm.
So I feel like you grew pretty significantly even during the pandemic as well. So how did you deal with that period of time?
Oh, it was hard because obviously you can't, like, for context, once again, Sydney was in a lockdown, so you can't go eat out at restaurants. But I was finding a lot of joy, like going to takeaway shops, you know, things like that, bakeries, or just ordering takeaway from restaurants and doing the exact same thing, but in that space. And TikTok only came about, I think, the end of the first lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really many videos that you could make. So it was mostly the Instagram side of things at that stage.
So you definitely tried, obviously, a bit of everything. Like you started out with YouTube and you were like, oh, now I'll do TikTok and Instagram. And then TikTok was the one thing that sort of really blew up and became a big thing.
TikTok blew up first. So that was the first one that hit 100,000. But if I look at the account stats, man, like... I would say out of 100, I think it's 120 something thousand now, but out of that, only maybe 35 to 40% are Australian.
So it's basically a big international crowd as well.
Yeah, so it's an international crowd, but that's what TikTok is, because most of the people that were using TikTok at the time are Americans, right? And only now, a lot of people from Australia are starting to catch on and download that app. It was good to be early, I suppose, because you get more people, I guess, watching you.
The organic reach, yeah.
Yeah, because you already have that audience now, and a lot more people who have like food pages on Instagram only now starting to jump onto TikTok because they're like, oh, everyone else is doing it, I'll do it too.
When you first did TikTok videos, were you, and I can't recall even myself, but watching videos, were you mainly doing like sort of selfie style, or did you have friends or even people who were helping you out to like film you? Because I think the one that I think very vividly about was Ramadan night markets, and you were sort of out and about.
The TikTok? Or the YouTube
video. I believe it was YouTube, actually.
Okay, so that was the YouTube video. That was when I was, that was during the lockdown, actually. I'm pretty sure that was during lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you could only just start going to other suburbs or LGAs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to Ramadan in Lakeba, man. And it was quite empty. Like, I know this year during the lockdown, during the Ramadan period in Lakemba, it was packed, man. Like, there was so many people there. But the time that I filmed that video last year, I just went with my boy, Kevin Cheng. He also does food on Instagram in his own way. He's a great guy. And yeah, I just came out. I was like, hey, I'm going to film a YouTube video, yeah? I'm going to be a YouTuber, man. And he's like, oh, yeah, all right. Because he's quite shy. Like, so yeah, it was fun. Like, he was helping me out a little bit with the filming. Yeah.
And pretty much just you like going through Ramadan night festival and just like basically sharing like your stuff there.
I think the first time I saw you was the Cabin Matter one.
Oh, yeah.
Cabin Matter video. Was that the one that blew up?
That was the one that blew up for YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
the Cheap Eats one.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, done it.
That one was a lot of fun to make because my goal for that video was not so much to do, you know, like just a Cheap Eats video, but it was also to storytell and to just talk about like our childhood growing up
it's
in
amazing. Cabramatta. Like props to you on that because
thank you, mate.
I talk to like, you know, I'm working in accounting, so I meet a lot of you know, Caucasians and you know, people from different backgrounds.
Mm.
And the only thing they would eat is, you know, fried rice and you know, fried noodles or dumplings, and that's it. That's the only Asian food that would ever eat.
Yep.
And when I see videos like that, it makes me feel proud that, like, you know, people are trying to, you know, tell a story about our food and our heritage and, you know, all the different types of food that we brought up, we've been brought up eating.
Yep.
So it's amazing. Like, I brought back a lot of memories as well. Yep.
Thank you,
man. My mum and dad used to bring me to Cabramatta and I used to hate it all the time going to Cabramatta.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really hit home for me.
Yeah.
And I watched the whole thing a few times, actually.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, but that's it. Like, for me, when I made that video, it was actually more to tour just places that I loved to eat when I was a kid.
Mm.
I only just masqueraded it as a $20 cheap eats tour.
You wanted just an excuse to go out and eat again?
Yeah, yeah. Like for me, that was a watchable video for the masses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then for everyone that grew up in Cabramatta or surrounding and Asian parents that would bring you to Cabramatta, it was just going to different places that you've been to already, like Red Lee and all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just places that you remember as a kid. So that's where that came about. And I think that's probably the reason why it blew up the way that it did.
Yeah.
Because I was getting a lot of comments on the video. I was getting a lot of DMs saying, oh, man, love your video. Like, this brought back memories. Yeah, it was, like, I guess, what's the word? Tugging on the strings for a lot of people.
It's very nostalgic for a lot of people. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of focus on, like, the latest trends, like what new restaurants opening up, particularly around, like, you know, maybe the eastern suburbs or even in the CBD and stuff. And you've sort of taken a different direction where you really wanted to focus on ethnic food and places that you grew up with, right?
Yep. Mm.
Yeah.
And don't you guys just love it, like, when a Caucasian comes up to you and says, oh, I know the best Chinese restaurant. And then when they say it, it's some, you know.
That being said, one of the best food people that I know, like the best food minds, he's Caucasian. He's a guy. He's my mate of mine, Nick Jordan.
Yeah.
Amazing guy, man.
Yeah.
What this guy, freelance journalist. Oh. So he writes food articles.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's a different story. Yeah. I'm just talking about the guys that are on the street that tell you that, their Chinese food is amazing.
Yeah.
Tell me about
him. This guy's brilliant, man. Like, this is a shout out to him, by the way. But he has a map of the best food in Sydney. It's called Have You Eaten? And it's pretty much a culmination of all of his work. He does copy for every single restaurant, single place, even if he hasn't visited it.
Mm-hmm.
Very focused on ethnic foods, you know, cultural foods, foods that he liked to explore. I remember, like, one of the places we ate at together was just this Thai restaurant in the city. It's called Kaesawn, right? It's one of the only places in the city that do dishes from southern Thailand.
Mm.
Or, like, you know, it's quite rare to find.
Really spicy food down there.
Really spicy, yeah. And he was just ordering, oh, yeah, I'll get that. I've been to this before, it's good. Yeah, because he lived in Thailand for a little bit too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm like just sitting there like, wow. So now, you know, it's a bit of a meme where every time we go out to dinner, I'm just like, Nick, you order, man. I'm good.
And he's taking to like the ethnic restaurants.
I'll take the photos, you order, man. Yeah.
Wow. So,
yeah, you do meet brilliant people like that, yeah.
Did you connect with him through some of the stuff that you were doing with all your content creation? So you must have had the opportunity, to meet like a lot of these people who are in the space, right? Yeah,
because he used to write for SBS and Broadsheet and stuff like that, you know what I mean? And when I was first learning how to, because I don't have no journalism background or nothing like that, you know, when I was learning to write, it was just me writing what was on my mind, so I used to read a couple of articles here and there just to understand, you know, how to write things, how to set up your way of writing so that it was cohesive, it was readable. And I always came across his work because his work had always been about restaurants that I wanted to visit.
Okay.
So I had, you know, followed him on Instagram. I'd messaged him and I'd said, you know, I love your work, man. Like, you're a big inspiration for me. That's how we connected.
And really? So he replied back to you? What did he say?
I don't know. I can't remember. It was just like, you know, he was appreciated the love that I was sending over, things like that.
You guys just teed up a time to meet up? And
yeah, we have something called the Eat Club now where it's just me and a couple of other boys, Kevin Chang, Steve, Hal. Shout out to these boys. But just guys that love food, love exploring food the way I do. We just, every month or two, we would go out to eat at some cool restaurant, man.
Mm. Like, I'm not sure if you're sharing your secrets, but for the guys that are, or the guys and girls that are trying to get out and do this type of like blogging and Instagram and TikTok, like, what is the perfect formula when it comes to getting the right post or viral content?
It's a, this is a perfect formula. I think the one thing you got to do is just do what you enjoy, man. Like, if you enjoy cafes and stuff like that, do the cafes. Because people will follow you. People will, you know, see what's good in your content based on, you know, how passionate you are about it. People will see that. You know, if you're just doing it, you know, just to put your food photos online.
Get the views.
Then that's cool. But then, like, it's not going to touch home for a lot of people, you know. Find something that you're passionate about. Start doing it. To start doing it consistently and then you'll grow, you'll get there.
I kind of get what you're saying in that because like in accounting, like people always ask me, you know, about how do I get many leads on the videos I do, and I never respond to that type of answer. I just say, yeah, we do. But like for me, I just do it because I find that there's a lot of reasons why to do it. One is to help the community, the business people. One is to build branding, but also one just for me to save a lot of time explaining the same thing every time.
That's it.
So there's no actual formula. There's no actual way to write the actual video or the script. You know, just something that comes from my mind and from experience, and just do it. And then trial and error, right? Like, so if you stop up a few times and it doesn't work, and then you just keep trying, and then you find someone that works. But has there been any ones that you just felt like, oh wow, like this is the way to do it for the viral content?
For YouTube, the tour videos seem to do really well because it's like you're going from place to place. You know, it's something watchable for 10 minutes. YouTube is very about the watch time, right? So you need good watch time in order for your video to be pushed. And a lot of the videos I still do to this day, I'll just like visit one restaurant, try out a little bit of their food, help to tell their story a little bit. And those aren't the ones that do really, really, really well most of the time.
It's usually the listicle type ones, isn't it?
It's usually the tour videos, because as someone who's watching the video, and I completely understand from the other perspective, from someone who's watching, you're going from place to place, so it keeps it interesting.
Yeah, it's like an experience. You're going through the journey.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And it's the same thing for everything, man, like TikTok as well. Like it's about watch time. It's about, you know, how much value you can bring to that person, whether it be like learning about food or just simply being entertaining. Yeah. It's about, you know, keeping them engaged. It's all about engagement, man.
This episode is produced and brought to you by Social Wave. Social Wave is a strategic content marketing agency helping businesses grow revenue using video, podcasts, and SEO. Head on over to socialwave.com.au to find out more. Now back to the show.
Yeah. Was food a big thing in the family? Obviously, amongst all Asians, obviously food is always big amongst the Asian family as well. But like, was there anything in terms of like family life and food that really sort of helped you shape, you know, your love for food?
My family loved food, but it was just like family dinner stuff, man. Like my dad used to stress this a lot. Like you have to be at dinner with the family. Like there was,
it was that one thing
when you're growing up. When I started doing this food vlog stuff, like I didn't eat at home as much anymore, understandably, right? But, and my dad was a little bit pissed off about that.
He was still pissed off, even though you
had the family. Yeah, he's like, where are you, man? Like, how come you're not at the family dinner? Yeah, but growing up, it was very big. Like, you have to eat at the dinner table with the family. And, you know, whatever they put on the table, and that's that, you know. And for me, it was cool growing up because there's always something different on the table. I noticed that, like, you would barely ever eat the same thing, like, every day for a month, because it was always changing. There was always something new. I'm like, where are you getting all these dishes from, man? Like, it was just things that my parents learned, you know, when they were growing up from their parents. My auntie lives with me too, so she would bring a lot more of the cultural foods in as well, like because she doesn't work, so she just stays in my household, and she would just cook whenever she felt like. So like once she moved in, I think maybe 6 years ago, the food started getting
better,
cooler. I didn't say better. It was just like more variety. Like it was just different things that I would see her make from scratch with her hands that I would never see from my parents because my parents are always working, man. Yeah.
Is this something that you would document? Because I feel like, you know.
I wanted to, but my auntie's like, she's shy, man. She's shy. She's like, think in my face. I'm ugly. I'm like, auntie, you're beautiful, man. Because
I feel like there's a lot of appetite for that stuff now.
Yeah,
I've seen 100%. Mum, dads, or aunties, uncles.
Yeah, but, you know, it is what it is. Like, I got to respect my auntie. She does, it doesn't feel comfortable, then that's it. You know?
Absolutely. So you definitely got values around that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of other advice around anyone who is trying to pursue it? I mean, I know Davey asked a question around, you know, how do you create like the best type of content out there? But, you know, if someone out there who wants to do the same thing as you do, any sort of words of wisdom?
Find your niche, your pocket, you know, maybe start off with a general, like if you're talking food, then start off with creating just food content about what you like and see what you really, really enjoy after doing it. Hone in on that niche and do it every single day. Like consistency is a big thing, man.
Speaking,
how do you get the motivation though? Like, it's just a
because you like it.
Just insane amount of work.
It's just like how you enjoy accounting.
Yeah, I know.
A lot of people just put it back on you. How the hell do you do accounting all day?
Some people are like, you know, I stayed up till 1 a.m. last night working, and to be honest, actually, yeah. I'm answering my own question. I just do it because I love it.
Yeah. That's it. Like, you do it because you love it, man. Like, I guess for me, I never really find days where I lack motivation. It's just something that's so habitual for me nowadays that, oh, I'm going to go home and I'm going to create this content.
It's a routine for you.
It's a routine, yeah. Yeah, it's become so fun for me that, like, when I'm writing nowadays, I don't even think about it. I was just like, da 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 da, and then it turns out into like something nice, and like, yeah, done. Cool. Boom. Yeah.
And then, what's the plan for you? I guess, and let's just say, like, the next few years. Do you want to continue doing what you're doing? Are there other plans in the pipeline? Anything you can share?
I want to continue doing what I'm doing because I enjoy it. You know what I mean? So it's just slowly growing day by day, and that's it. Like, you want to see growth, I suppose. Like, you don't put too much significance on that, but then it's fun. It's fun to see a little bit of growth here and there. It's fun to see you reach more people. It's fun to see the work that you've done all the way up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some days I scroll back and all the stuff that I've made, I'm like, cool, man.
Mm. You get to reflect back.
Yeah, like for me, it's cool. Like, and like one day when I'm 40 and I'm on old fart and, you know, I have kids, I'll be like, hey, look what dad used to do. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah,
like so for legacy. Me, it's cool. Yeah, because I guess it's a way to not have any regrets in life and to do something a little bit different, a little bit, you know, out of your comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
and to just have something cool under your belt. Yeah. Over the next couple of years, I'm not sure. Like, I obviously do want to continue doing it, but I don't know where I'll take it. A lot of people ask. Like, I've always wanted to go overseas just for a little bit.
I was going
to
ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. That'd be cool. Like, even just for 2 to 3 months and to have that as, you know, a bucket list ticked off saying that I lived overseas as a content creator for even just a little while.
Yeah.
That's so cool, man.
People do that. And I just to be honest out there, yeah. It should be tax deductible if you're traveling over there.
Why not?
If you're traveling over there and filming all the time,
yeah.
I don't see why. And then you're
it's
making money.
It's for work,
money. Man. 100%. But I, you know, I don't work for the ATO, so I don't know 100%, but like,
but you're an accountant.
Yeah,
though,
I'm
so.
An accountant. But in honest opinion, the ATO hasn't got up to that point yet.
Yeah.
So they don't really actually see YouTube as a career.
Yep.
So it's very hard to try to work out what's tax deductible and what's not.
Well, technically it is because you earn money from it, right?
Yeah, it's connected.
If you earn money from it.
Yeah, your expense is actually technically connected to your income. So therefore it's tax deductible, especially when you're doing it every single day.
Yep.
So I could see your one as tax deductible
for the
food bloggers out there.
But certainly there's a lot of countries now coming out with digital nomad visas as well.
Yeah.
A lot of them are trying to attract foreigners or expats to come in and live in their country for, you know, 6 to 12 months now, which didn't exist because I was looking into it, you know, pre-pandemic. And I think, you know, the pandemic's the reason why a lot of this stuff now, a lot of countries want spending back in their economy.
Yep.
And, you know, even Europe, you can only spend 3 months for every 6 months in Europe in the Schengen area.
Yep.
Whereas now you've got countries like, you know, I'm trying to rattle off names, but even like in the Balkan area, like Croatia and stuff like that, Estonia, where they're like, no, come and we'll give you a digital. I think even Italy was coming out with a digital.
I think Bali did.
Really?
Bali was offering it right now. Yeah. So Bali you can nice. Definitely do it. Like it's something that's really sort of out there at the moment. And a lot of people are doing, a lot of people just running their businesses from overseas as well. If you have a fully remote team.
So. Yeah, I have a lot of clients traveling right now. So they literally just said, hey, Davey, the great thing is they still signed the contract, so they're still working with me, but they're traveling and working at the same time. So
That's cool.
A lot of them are doing it, man. It's amazing what they do.
Yeah.
Like I admire you guys like completely. Mm. I wish I could do it.
What's your go-to place when it comes to like, if you're like, dude, I got one more meal. You're on death row.
Yeah. Oh, this is a very hard question, man.
Really?
You've never been asked this question before?
You never thought about it?
I never thought about it.
Yeah, you go death row. Like tomorrow, I'll give you
my 2 cents on it, so you can think about it. Give you some time. Mine would be sweet and sour pork.
Yeah,
such a white guy.
No, I mean it means a lot to you.
I know, it means so much. I remember mom and dad used to like
you know, nostalgic thing.
Yeah, like that would bring like any times when it comes to birthdays or like you know they have a day where they would be going to work. I think they were working. I don't know what they were doing actually. And I would come home because me and my brothers would be at home by ourselves, which is, I think at that time illegal, but because we were all under 18, but my oldest brother was looking after me all the time. We were like 10. My brother was 10 and I was like probably like 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
And they would come home and they would leave us at home all the time during school holidays. And then they would bring sweet and sour pork back. all the time. Like, and I would just look forward to seeing my parents, not because I miss them, just because of the sweet sour pork.
Yeah.
And so it just brings back so many memories of me and my brother just hanging at home, doing stupid stuff, breaking stuff, and then being worried about when our parents tell us off, but also the things my brother used to do to keep us entertained, because we weren't really wealthy. We didn't have any consoles. Mm. So he would make games up for us to play, my oldest brother. And I don't know, just that sweet and sour pork just hits me.
Nostalgic food definitely tastes the best. Like, if I sort of think about for me, you know, parents used to own a supermarket, so they used to make good money. Like, this was during high school.
Did they?
Yeah.
Which supermarket?
They used to own an IGA in Riverwood.
Okay.
Right next to the train station.
Yeah,
so
right.
We did that for like 7 years. And they, you know, one of their big things was like, oh, we get to go out and eat more together. And so we'd go to this local Chinese restaurant in Auburn, which was amazing food. Unfortunately, shut down now. And salt and pepper pork ribs. Like, literally, I remember the first time having it, I was like, holy shit, what is this?
Yum, yum.
You know, like, you know, so like, I think if I'm on death row, that'd be the main. I want to ask Noel, actually. If you're on death row,
what are you?
Yeah, what would you?
I'm gonna make
food. What any particular dish?
Oh, a happy mohinga.
Mohinga?
Yeah. Oh, mohinga.
A national dish.
I haven't tried mohinga yet. I know there's a couple restaurants, like I've heard of Suns and all them.
Suns is the only one that's open now.
Because there used to be one at Granville, right?
Yeah.
And they closed down. You got to take us. No.
There was a Bourbon Kitchen in Surrey Hills. They closed down because of COVID.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
So there's only one.
Suns is the last Burmese.
Let's do one.
Let's do it, man. We got to do it.
Have you thought about it?
You know what I'd say? Boomboe.
Oh my god.
Good choice.
So,
you know, this whole time we were talking, I'm like multitasking. I'm like, question marks in my mind. I'm like, what would I choose? I'm like, I don't know, man. But
Boomboe. Oh my
god. I love Boomboe, man.
Yeah, I love Boomboe as well. Yeah. Actually, there's this competition. Pho or Boomboe?
Yeah.
For me, it's Boomboe.
I actually prefer Boomboe.
For me too. Yeah.
It's just a flavor.
There's just something about it, man. Yeah. Like,
spicy, you know.
It's spicy, sour. Bulky. It's just like everything about it. It just tastes amazing.
Boomboe for me is like, it's just fun, man. Like, we used to go to Yahoo in Kenley Heights back then. It's now, you know, changed owners and changed names and all that. But for me, when we first came out as kids, finished high school, into uni, we'd go out to eat. It's always Yahoo, man.
That's the go-to place.
Yeah, that was our go-to place. And that place, or just Boomboe in general, had a lot of like feels for me because, you know, even my girlfriend, when we used to work part-time jobs, I used to pick her up after she finished her part-time job at like 11 o'clock at night. We would go late night Boomboe. Something about it, man.
So it's nostalgia for you as well, right?
It is nostalgia, but like the dish itself, man, is just, oh, like when you eat it, beautiful, beautiful. I don't think I've done that on YouTube yet, actually.
You should do one.
You should do Boomboe. You should just do Yahoo, like the whole video based on Yahoo.
Yahoo's but a big franchise.
They're gone.
Yeah.
The whole thing's gone.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, there's a few in the city. But
there's one in Riverwood.
There's one in
Riverwood. There's one in Eastwood. And there's one in
Bankstown, right?
Homebush, Flemington.
Don't tell me Bankstown's gone.
Bankstown's gone.
Bankstown's gone. Canley's gone. Cabra's gone.
So all the...
They were the big ones, though.
Yeah, they were the big ones.
Yeah.
Oh my god. And they're still around, right? They just changed the name, right?
Well, I think
if it's changed the name,
because they were making money. Like, I could see because they were always packed.
Now the only one that's like OG for Boomboe is Longbat.
Longbat in Bankstown, right?
Yeah.
Or is there one in Cabra as well?
There's one in Cabra. There's two in Cabra, but one recently changed name as well.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Mm. I was going to ask you where to get it, but that's probably still the place to go, isn't it?
That's the OG. There's other places to get good Boomboe. Like, there's this place in Edmondson Park that does a really good one.
Edmondson Park?
Yeah, man.
I was like going to Narellan again.
So, you know what? Like, so you're an expert in Sydney food. So, best pho?
That's hard. Depends what I'm feeling that day.
Give us some names.
All right, I'll give you three, right? Two foodies in Mount Pritchard. The cult favorite, which is Pho Ang in Bankstown. And there's this new one that I've discovered, which has been like really, really good recently that no one knows about, which is in Fairfield Heights called Pho Delicious. And it's just like this small shop. They have like not much light. I think I've seen one of those
videos. It's like a takeaway, like it's part of like a petrol station or something. Was that?
No, that one's the Mount Pritchard one.
Oh, that one's the Mount Pritchard one.
But this place is like cool, man, because I don't know whether or not it's because it's quite new and no one has found out about it and they've left the broth simmering for like you know, 3 days or something like that. But it's really good. Yeah. Like, it's a really good broth. Yeah, yeah.
You were surprised when you went there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
Pho Delicious. That's what it's
called. Pho Delicious. Yeah. And funnily enough, like, none of those are in Cabra.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Yamcha?
Yamcha. For me growing up, like, VinFat was the go-to.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this new place in Cabra called Nine Yummy.
Nine Yummy?
Where's Nine that? Yummy. It's, you know where the old car park was, where they've built the building now?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's sort of opposite there. Yeah. So it's owned by people from Hong Kong.
Right.
Oh.
The service is disrespectful, man. Like, yeah, that's, you know, that's why it's, you know, cool. Well, let me tell you a story, man. Like, we sat down and my girlfriend ordered like Hong Kong milk tea, because they have that for some reason, right? And then it comes in, you know, a cup of milk tea and then a bottle of syrup. And then she asked, like, what's the syrup for? Like, you know, as in, is there syrup already inside there, or are you adding more, or is there no syrup at all? So that was the question. And the guy goes, use your IQ.
Whoa!
And I'm like, what did he just say?
Like, the food is delicious.
Yeah, man. And then you eat the food and like, oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? I can't say anything, man. It's like, it's good food. It is what it is, man. Like, yeah.
Wow. Where do you, you know, when you like sort of researching places, like how do you find? Because I feel like the places you look for are like quite esoteric. Like, I'm like, what the hell? Was like, even that Dominican fried, I was like, I didn't even know there was that joint here. So
yeah.
How do you find these places?
I don't know. For me, like, if they're on Google, then cool. Like, what I would like to do is I would normally find a suburb that I like to eat at. Just scroll through, you know. You get your top 10 for the suburb, of course, which nearly everyone knows about. But yeah. Then you keep scrolling. And sometimes what you'll find is like a new restaurant that's just opened up. And then if it sounds cool, it sounds cool. You know, there might be one review. And that review might say, oh, this is the best thing I've ever eaten in my life, man.
Okay.
And like, you're not sure whether or not it's written by their friend or like, it's a real review. Yeah. But I'm willing to take that risk.
So you go and check it out.
Yeah. Like, if it's new, it sounds cool, and that's it. Yeah.
So, sorry, going back to the same questions that I've asked before. Halal snack pack. I want to know.
Oh.
Best halal snack pack.
My personal favorite, I don't eat many HSPs these days because, you know, health. But my personal favorite back in the day used to be at Ashfield. It was Metro One.
Yeah, Metro One is shit.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
I got a crazy story about Metro One, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the owner's Turkish.
Mm.
And I used to eat at Metro One all the time.
Yeah.
And I was in Turkey. And so we were in Cappadocia. So for those who don't know where Cappadocia is, like, you know when you see the hot air balloons? Those cave hotels, right?
Beautiful.
That's where we were. Beautiful place.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were on this like tour and they were taking us to different places. And we're at this place called Valley of the Pigeons or some shit. And it was just because there's a lot of pigeons there. No other reason. It's called Valley of the Pigeons. Because there's a lot of holes. And where they used to create homes for pigeons.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is, like, I was with my partner.
Yeah.
We got off the car. It was the small tour.
Yeah.
I was just talking to her and, like, a dude to the other side picked up my accent. He's like, oh, you're from Australia. And I turned around to him. I was like, oh, you're Aussie as well? And he's like, yeah, we're Aussie. And I'm like, so you guys are Turkish? Like, yeah, I'm with my
Don't tell me here. This was the owner.
This was the owner of Metro One.
Wow.
The owner of Metro One was at Valley of the Pigeons. And I was like, no, actually, the conversation was something like, hey, so what do you guys do? And I was like, oh, you know, he's working in hotels. I took a year off.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, you know, I own a few food businesses. And I was like, tell me where it is. Like, you're in Sydney? He's like, Sydney. He's like, Ashfield. And I was like, oh, cool, Ashfield. I was like, Ashfield's full of Shanghainese food, like Chinese food. I was like, what do you own? He's like, it's like a kebab shop, you know? Like, I was like, it's not Metro One, is it? And he's like, yeah, it's Metro One. So
wow.
I bumped into the owner of Metro One in fucking Turkey of all places.
That's bad.
And he was like, look, when you come back to Sydney, like, come
by for a feed. Yeah,
come back for a feed. And it was so funny.
Yeah, wow. He's a cool bloke, man. He's a top bloke.
He's a good guy. He's a really
I haven't seen him in a very long time.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't remember me, but I was a young kid back then when I used to eat there a lot.
You used to always eat there?
Yeah, like we used to drive from Cabramatta to Ashfield just for Metro One, man.
Yeah.
Because Cabramatta, there's only like one, two kebab shops close by, like in Fairfield.
Well, it's the only place that they do it in a pizza box as well.
Yeah.
You know?
I did a food tour for some Americans the other day.
Mm.
First time doing it, and it was a private one. And
they reach out to you?
Yeah, but they were working for a company as researchers. And then they wanted a tour of, you know, just food in Sydney that they don't have in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right. HSP.
Oh, 100% like, HSP, all right, man.
Metro One. So I took him to Metro One. Yeah, I took him to a couple of different places. Like,
how'd they find the food?
Yeah, they loved it, man. Yeah, yeah, just stuffed it.
You need to take him to HSP after you had a night out. Like, it tastes so much better when you've had a night out or drank.
I loved it, man. That was my first time doing a food tour for anyone.
Mm.
And obviously, it was a private thing and I'm probably like, I don't have the time to do it.
You should do more of it maybe potentially, right?
Everyone's been asking me to do like Cabramatta food tours. They're like, oh, when are you doing that?
You should.
Huh? Yeah, but it's only going to happen on like a Saturday, Sunday, for example.
But you think about it, it would actually help the like you know the community so much.
Maybe if I ever go full time on food and I quit optometry.
You know, you say Saturday, Sunday. I sort of think like, yeah, because you're doing full-time work as well. I think people prefer to do a weekend. You know,
you should put it out there, man. I reckon people would.
Nah, but at the moment, I'll actually work on Sunday. So,
work on weekends as well.
Yeah, so it's required. It's a requirement to work in optometry that you work a weekend most of the time.
Right.
Yeah, so Sundays.
That's why you're here.
Yeah.
Is that why?
Wednesday's my day off.
Oh, Wednesday's your day off.
I do all my filming on, like, for YouTube on Wednesday, which is my day off. And then I go eat out probably like 3-4 times a week. On other days, mostly on the Saturday and maybe the Wednesday as well, by the time.
Do you do fine dining? I don't ever see that.
Here and there.
It's probably not your thing, is it?
Yeah.
Like for me, when I do my food stuff, it's the food that I like to eat. When I was growing up, man, we were broke, bro. Like, there was no fine dining talk, like, you know, at all, man. Like, we ain't going fine dining at all. So, fine dining was like once a year when my girlfriend and I were celebrating our anniversary.
Like paninis or hurricanes?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it slowly got a bit better, you know. It slowly went into like Hubert and
is that how you say Hubert?
I think so.
Oh,
well, Hubert.
It's French name, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shoot.
Bonjour, s'il vous plaît, you know. Like Hubert.
It's very French.
Yeah. It slowly got to better restaurants after that. And nowadays, like, obviously, you can afford it a little bit more because you got your full time job and stuff. But it's still not my favorite thing to do, per se, because, like, I grew up with food that I like takeaway type food, like just homey meals and that sort of thing. And that's always been what I've been more about anyway. So I do the fine dining, the odd fine dining here and there, but not much.
It's also awkward to create content for fine dining, I feel like.
Is it?
Well, think about it. I mean, you're in a pretty quiet, usually it's pretty quiet or pretty like formal.
Oh, yeah. Like,
but I think it's getting more casual these days as well.
There's, when you bring out, because it's quite dark and intimate. Yeah, in a lot of fine dining restaurants. And if you're going to bring out like a light, man, it's frowned upon, man. Like sometimes I've heard of people in the food space that do that and then they end up getting complained about by the table next to them.
Yeah.
You know, like why are you bringing out a big light and ruining the mood?
Yeah. So you're definitely combining like etiquette in it as well because you sort of
Yeah.
On top of that, also like you're pretty quick. You know, you get your photos done or you get your videos done and then that's it.
Try to be quick when I need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I do my photos and videos on my phone, I try my best. Like, I've learned how to do this now, but a lot of the time when I'm eating with someone, they don't know I'm doing it. Well, I'm just like, bang, 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 bang.
You
like,
having a conversation at the same time while you're doing it?
Yeah. Like, I'm holding my phone, taking videos in a way where I know how to do it. And once again, it's so habitual for me that I don't think about it.
We put it to the test when we go to Suns in Blacktown anyway.
Wow. Let's put it to the test. Yeah. And I'm just like, bang, 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 all right, done, you know? I want this out of the way. I don't want to think about it. It's never going to be perfect as a content creator, you know this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want the perfect shot. But, you know, for me, I quickly learned when you're making the video or when you're uploading photos, no one's going to look at, you know, you missing +10 brightness on one photo there's a tissue on the side for like 0.1 seconds on the video, you know, things like that. Because they don't look at it, man. Like, you know, they watch that video. Cool, bang, gone, done, you know?
Yeah.
You get 15, 20 seconds of their attention span. Me wasting another 5 minutes thinking about that is a waste of my time.
It ruins the experience as well.
Yeah. I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I'll work with what I have and it'll come out well anyway. Because at the end of the day, when people watch or look at the content, they want to hear, you know, the experience. And they just want to get value out of that for like the 15, 20 seconds that they have their attention on that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And they don't remember the next day anyway.
Yeah, you know? Of course. Yeah, definitely. We care about it way more than anyone else. I'm going back to listicles here, but I'm curious. We talk about like the, you know, death row, like what you're going to eat. But if you go for us, like people like us, you get top 5 places to eat that I bet you guys have never been to. Keep in mind that we did grow up in the same area. Doesn't have to be 5. Just give us some recommendations.
Okay. In the area?
It doesn't have to be in the area, yeah.
In Fairfield, there's a Iraqi restaurant called Al Diafa, Al Iraqi. And they do like kebabs and, you know, fried fish and stuff like that.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I have a funny story of how I found this place. So I sometimes work at Fairfield with my job. And then one day I just walked out and I see a couple of, because you get Assyrians like hanging out Fairfield on the streets during lunch hour. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Should you be at work? Anyway, you ask them, I asked them, like, where's a great place to
eat? You walked up to him and you were like, where's the best place to go to?
Yeah, I'm like, hey, man. Like, cause,
hey,
like,
man, do you want to, can you tell me where to buy food?
Yeah. Is that what you did?
Okay. No, it's the same thing as that guy that was in wherever he was, where he was just asking where's the best place to get that.
Mm.
When you travel, like, I'm sure you'd be more than happy to do that. Like, you'd be comfortable to do that. You just ask a random local. Like,
it makes sense. It's an advantage being Asian because you're non-threatening.
Oh, here we go. This is a different conversation. I thought we were going to have this conversation today.
Actually. Well, let's do it. Let's keep going. Yeah.
All right. Being Asian for me as a content creator in the food space, I reckon has been a positive because in many ways you can find a relationship that much quicker with people. Right.
Because you think people are more forthcoming.
No, it's not particularly that I'm Asian, but it's just like a lot of the cultural foods that I look into, those people are from overseas, man, you know. So when I'm coming through and I'm like, yeah, I'm born here, but, you know, my family's overseas. Like, it doesn't matter that we're from different countries, different backgrounds, halfway across the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same experience because, like, coming into Australia, you know, our families are from overseas. Our parents don't speak English much. We grew up very similar, you know. So you immediately have, like, a very fun relationship with people that is – otherwise very hard to build.
Mm.
And that's allowed me to do a lot of what I do, like, so well.
Is that because they see you come in the restaurant and you've got the camera out and stuff like that? Or is it, how do you
find the connection? I just chat to them sometimes, man.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the time when I go to a restaurant as a new customer, like, I don't say anything. I'm just like, I'm not Sydney food boy. Like, I don't show them my socials or whatever. I just eat like a normal customer, but I talk to them as well.
So you actually deliberately spend the time to actually connect with them and
get to know them. Cause like for me, like I'm genuinely interested in, you know, how does this food come about? Why are you serving it? You know, some places you'll find when you go to places is like they're serving food that, you know, this might be a 60-year-old and he's serving food that he grew up with as a child and you won't find it anywhere else, you know? And I'm like, oh, this is so cool. But I can have this experience, you know, just going around, searching around for places and walking around, you know, the streets in Fairfield, for example, once again. And like as an Asian or as a person of color, like they know that when I'm asking these questions, I'm not coming from a place where, you know, I'm trying to put them down or anything like that. I'm genuinely interested in, you know, what's your culture? I want to learn about your culture and maybe form a relationship based on how I can relate to that through my culture.
I get this. I totally get it. Because I think when we were young and, you know, we're immigrants and people of color, we don't have much money and food is our happiness.
Yep.
You know, back then, like, you know, we used to stress about money, but one thing we also stressed about was food, like in making sure there was food on the table. And so we really, if we had food on the table, it means that we were happy.
Yep.
And that brought a lot of fond memories.
Yep.
So the funny thing about this is, and I can relate to this, is because my mum and dad, when I asked them what do they want to do for their birthdays or what do they want to do, you know, just have fun, it's always got food. To do with food.
Yeah, food is our way of showing love. For, I would say, a majority of the countries around the world, that's just how you show love. It's food. And everyone can relate to each other through food. That's what I've found doing what I do.
In terms of anything else, any other words, anything else you want to say basically before wrapping up?
Food is, of course, like everything that I talk about, but it means so much to so many people and it means like it's everyone's way of showing love. So like I wish to live a life where, you know, food continues to be a big part of my life, I suppose. And I think if the world goes that way and if a lot more people see food in that manner, the world will be a much lovelier place, right? Because everyone will connect to each other through that. So that's how I've always seen it. And that's why I get so much like love out of food.
I can see that 100%. So we're going to hit it up with some dinner anyway. So appreciate you coming on the show, man. Yeah, that's it. We're going to go hit up some Burmese food.
Yep.
Cool.
Thank you, boys, for having me on the show, man. Thanks for coming, man. Thank you to everyone who's been watching the podcast and all that.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Done.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Level Asian podcast. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode. And why not share it with friends and family who might enjoy it too? Also, make sure you head over to levelasianpodcast.com to join our email list and to receive the latest updates and get notified when the next episode drops. If you know a great guest we should feature, email us at contact@levelasianpodcast.com or DM us on our socials in the show notes. Catch you on the next episode.